Our story starts around the 1880s when James Beasley Petter was given ironmongery business as a wedding present. And we've got pictures showing in the borough the oil and colour and engine merchant, more or less around where Superdrug is now, opposite the War Memorial. And then there is a cast iron bollard in Waterloo Lane, which says Petter and Edgar Iron Foundry, marking the point where another early foundry was. And some of the early products from there, one of which is a cheese press, or a double cheese press, which we have here. And significantly, it has the name Petter on, but it also has the name Edgar, which may be slightly less familiar. And that was James Beasley Petter's early business partner. And they made in the foundry, the cheese press, ovens for doors, bread ovens, which were some of the very popular products that they made. They also made, which really got the Petter name going, was the Nautilus grate, an early form of circulating heat radiator, cast iron. In his autobiography, his daughter has says that he was looking at a coal scuttle one day, and that gave him the idea for this Nautilus grate. And I suppose what's great about it was that Queen Victoria had them installed on Osborne House in the Isle of Wight. So if it's good enough for Queen Victoria, it's good enough for the people who could afford it, families of Yeovil. And there were three types. I believe the study, the boudoir, which we don't use very often, and probably more the lounge that we would call it now. We've got an illustration of that. What would come next was that James Beasley Petter and his wife Charlotte had 15 children, so a large family even for those days. And three of the children are significant: Ernest and Percival, who are the twins, and then Guy Petter, who was their older brother by about a year, we understand. Ernest and Percival were very much into the Boys' Own papers that were then. We still have things like that now. And there was a design for an engine in there, which they thought they could make. And their father helped them out by giving them a lot of money at that stage to look into car manufacture. From this Boys' Own paper, around 1894-1895, Petter's then employed one of the old school engineers, as Percival Petter calls him in his autobiography, Ben Jacobs, who worked for an engineering company, Sibley's at Martock, and helped to adapt this design of engine for the horseless carriage from the Boys' Own paper into an oil engine, a powered engine of about 2.5 horsepower to power the horseless carriage. And then Hill and Bowl, the carriage builders, coach builders, built the coachwork for it. They were based in Yeovil and Sherborne. And he also records, Percival Petter, that they drove it to Montacute House when Montacute House had an open day, and they would charge a small fee to ride this horseless carriage around and take people around on this very novel invention. They later developed, in about 1898, a carriage which had two electric motors powering the front wheels. But they were saying that the brakes weren't very good on it, and there was this order for a German company who said, well, can you sort out the brakes? And Percival Petter records that they said, well, we'll drop the price for you. But the deal fell through. So that was a very great shame to the Petters. So the course of Petters may have gone very differently, but then the car manufacturers stopped. We should also note that on the cheese press, there was Petter and Edgar, and the course of Petter's, again, may have gone very differently, because Mr. Edgar sadly died in a carriage accident. The horse reared up that he was with. This was a conventional carriage, of course, and he was killed in Princess Street, which Louisa Harris, who wrote a diary between 1887 and 1920, records this happening. So again, the course of Petter's may have gone very differently. After the First World War, they still had a lot of aircraft production keeping them going, particularly the de Havilland DH-9 and DH-9A, which they were making under licence, which was keeping them going very much. But they still looked into other markets. And we have two other products here which emphasise that theme of diversification. The first one being the pianola, which we have there. And sources record that they made many pianos, but I think we have a distinction in that we have got, possibly, our records recorded of being the only pianola that Westland ever made. And significantly, when you lift the lid, it says Petter's Limited, and then also Westland as well. So it clearly dates from that, either just during the First World War or just after. And also, as well, our records record that there's a label for Swaffield and Foot in there as well. And to people of a certain generation would remember that as one of the piano dealers and sheet music sellers in Yeovil. So an interesting link between Petters and a name from Yeovil. The second diversification type object we have, much smaller than the pianola, is a potometer, or contometer as many people might know it, an early form of calculator. So Petter's looking into office equipment, and there's some debate. Some sources say it was developed by Percival, some say it was developed by his older brother Guy for many years, but certainly they took out patents for this adding machine between 1923 and 1930. And ours probably dates from around that 1930 to 1932 period. Looks like an early form of Bakelite type material, and adds from numbers 1 to 5. You need to press two numbers down to get numbers higher than 5. And then what's useful for us is that we've got a petometer that Petter's made with Petter's patent on, and then after that, just behind it, and only recently donated, was the adding machine that they sold under license to the Bell Punch Company in America. So we've got two examples, potometer and the example they made under license, or sold under license, to the Bell Punch Company. So those are just a few of the other objects that we've got that Petters and Westlands made.
How important to the company's survival financially were these products that they were producing different to making aircraft?
Well, certainly the pianos, I think, is an interesting example, because relatively few were made, so perhaps they developed those just as an offshoot before things particularly like the Lysander came in, which saw use for the special operations executive. So it seems to be particularly as a stopgap between those two products, and particularly as we've only got, as what's said to be the only one, that would say limited numbers were made. But certainly the potometer saw some success. Limited numbers made by Petters, but much more by the Bell Punch Company, and they even produced advertisements for them. They also, as far as we know, that Petters also records in his autobiography, is the only motorcycle they made, really stemming back from the horseless carriage engine. Ben Jacobs really should have the credit for that. That the development of that, they took the vaporizer off, and really that developed into the handyman agricultural stationary engines, which people may have been less familiar with, because we think of Yeovil as helicopters, but they were still making stationary engines in Yeovil up to about 1939, before the outbreak of the Second World War. Sources also record that Percival looking after that side of the manufacturing, and then Ernest looking after the aircraft side, then joining up with Lister Petter in about 1939 to make the stationary engine side continuing. But the key thing, that engine with the horseless carriage taking the vaporizer off, we also understand was that formed the basis of this motorcycle, which Percival Petter records as being possibly the first motorcycle in this country. The other product that Petter's made in collaboration with Seaton, Douglas Seaton, car dealer, many people remember being on the corner of Clarence Street, was the Seaton Petter car. Now, Seaton provided the bodywork, as Hill and Bold did with the horseless carriage, and Petter the engine. And as far as we know, this looked much more like a conventional car. But as with the horseless carriage, people often said, oh, how are you getting on with that? And he said, we're pushing it again. And he said, you often are. So what happened with the Seaton Petter car? There were two interesting things about it. One, it was advertised as the first 100-pound car, which was interesting, but by the time you added certain extras, it pushed it up over that 100 pounds, which is interesting. So we would think of the Misdescription Act now in terms of advertising. But also there are stories of it saying it got stuck in reverse, which wasn't very helpful. So those are the other two things about it. And of course they formed the British Dominion Car Company, so you can see where Petters were going there in terms of the grandeur of how it was to be marketed. And there were also brochures produced, what looked like, showing the simplicity of the design, and I have to be careful what I say, because a lady is shown operating the car and going over rather rough terrain, which looks like Ham Hill. And where we have 60-40 split seat, rear seats in certain cars now, which are the norm. There are pictures of the lady taking the seats out to adapt it or fold it down, give you much more loading space. So that was the Seaton Petter car in about the 1930s. But as we say, as far as we know, the only evidence we have are those brochures and no actual surviving evidence of it.